Hello, welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. We're out in the Welsh Hills again today, having a walk. Nice and sunny today, which is good, and not muddy, which is a big bonus. So, today we're going to do episode 18 of our Tao Te Ching series. So we're going to have a little read through chapter 31, and then have a chat about it and see what we thought Lao Tzu was trying to convey to the world. All right then, chapter 31. The guide who walks the way never resorts to violence. The sage goes to the left side of the emperor, while the man of war goes to the right. Weapons are terrible things, and no sage will have anything to do with them unless there is no alternative. The sage wants peace and quiet. No victory is free of grief, and so to celebrate one is to glory in the death of innocent people. No one who revels in death like this can be true to the way or is fit to rule in our world. At glad times, the place of honour is on the left. After disaster, it is on the right. So in the army, the officers stand to the left, while the general stands to the right. So the whole thing is staged like a funeral. When a war kills many, we must mourn for them. And if you win the war, you must grieve it. So this follows on quite nicely from our previous podcast. It's like a similar sort of vein. Again, we're talking about who is fit to actually rule us and lead us and help the human project to flourish. So starting off with the first couple of lines then. The guide who walks the way never resorts to violence.
In this chapter, Lao Tzu makes the case for non-violence and the celebration of peace. And he warns us about the true nature of war, of its horror and terror. Once again, he associates everything he wants to say with the figure of the sage. The sage being the complete human being, the optimum human being. This conception of a full human being isn't really like the Western, maybe Christian, conception of the saint, or even the Indian conception of the saint. It's somebody who will advise rulers, who has a sense of the world, who's practical, and who is rooted in the world of practicality and affairs, at the same time as having a sense of the Tao, the ultimate mystery of existence, of having a connection with it through contemplation.
I found it quite interesting that he's talking about the right and the left.
Yeah.
In this. And again, sort of quite practical, where he it says the sage won't have anything to do with weapons, they're terrible things, but then adds, unless there's no alternative.
Yeah. He's not a full-on non-uncompromising pacifist. He's prepared to admit that there are occasions when you might have to do some self-defensive moves in life, in strategy, in the life of a state, in the life of an individual even. And that in itself is interesting, you know, it's a practical stance rather than an absolute principle. In fact, if anything, Lao Tzu is a bit suspicious of people who make claims about absolutes. Where he does perhaps come close to an absolute, the Tao, he's very reluctant to say too much about it, so that it's not given an absolute character in our judgments and in discourse. And this is a very subtle but essential feature of Lao Tzu's Taoism. And he says, weapons are terrible things. I mean, this is just a very, very plain statement. There's no appeal to God or morality or absolute notions of right and wrong. There's just this very bold existential statement: weapons are terrible things. And of course he's right. He's right. And since Lao Tzu's day, we've come from cavalry and spears and bows and arrows and swords to nuclear weapons, which can wipe out entire cities with a single bomb, with a single explosion, delivered halfway around the world on a missile. Weapons truly are terrible things. Even in Lao Tzu's day, he was a sensitive, clued up man saying weapons are terrible things. What are we supposed to say now, where our weapons and our arms industry and our commitment to war is a millionfold what it was then?
There is no sentence to describe just how bad it is, or is there really?
1.7 trillion globally, at the last estimate that I came across, spent on weapons, and I know it's more than that now. Trump, when he got in, increased the American budget, which is not most of that, it's three quarters of a trillion, something of that order. And he got in on a policy of not prosecuting so many foreign wars, which was a popular policy and helped him to get in, but did up military spending. At one point he gave the Pentagon even more money than they asked for. Says, "Oh, have a bit extra."
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, go and buy something nice for yourself.
Yeah, and this is an enormous amount of dosh. It could solve world poverty at a stroke. And so much use could be made of those resources and that energy, which the 1.7 trillion symbolises and acts as a token for. So he's right. He's just right. Weapons are terrible things. And he tries to tell us what the proper response to war is, particularly even to victory. And this is kind of a bit counterintuitive. You win, you think you want to crow and have big parades and celebrations. And he says, no, it's a grief. Cause should be cause for grief. If you're a full human being, it'll be a cause for grief. Because people have died and innocent people have died. And again, in our modern situation, senseless wars, done under false pretences, on fake intelligence, weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, end up with millions and millions of people. In the case of Iraq, probably around a million. And the country's still in absolute chaos as a result of a war that was just fought on false pretences. In our own case, our state, the British state, I'll put it to you, is a death machine. It supplies weapons and aircraft to the Saudi government so that they can bomb Yemen back to the Stone Age, causing a famine, causing cholera epidemics, causing the deaths of children in the many thousands. And the British government, in its wisdom, sends RAF technicians to maintain the aircraft and make sure that the bombs and the missiles will work. That is disgusting beyond disgust. That is our state, and I will never ever have any faith in it while it conducts itself like that. And these people are idiots. Our leaders are idiots. They're certainly not sages modelled on Lao Tzu's notion of the sage, who is also the best person to advise rulers. They're not getting that advice. They don't grieve at victory. They don't understand the full existential weight of the suffering that war unleashes, of the actual death and people being widowed, and children being orphaned, and infrastructure being destroyed that sustains life. They have no sense of the existential weight of it. And it's almost, we expect that of our politicians. Which is why I think Lao Tzu does have a lesson for us, as ancient as it is, as distant as it is. We have politicians who celebrate war. and who in themselves, in their souls, are so corrupted that they don't experience the full existential weight of the decisions that they make, which are abstract decisions, which treat people like numbers on a spreadsheet. Cannon fodder, factory fodder, numbers on a spreadsheet. That's how the people are treated in this political setup that we're in, by the government, by the rulers. Lao Tzu laments it, because he was in the midst of something similar. Remember the guy's writing at the time of the war in States, he's so disgusted with the way shit's going that he's gone off into the hills.
Yeah.
He bugged out and got persuaded to write his wisdom before he went. Because, you know, must remember, the sage is not only this meditator, this person who's encountered the universe, encountered their own deepest processes, yet at the same time as some kind of alertness to the practicalities of life and to politics and to the whole kind of conundrum of societies and how they're organised. And I think it has something to tell us, and I agree totally with this. This is my position. When a war kills many, we must mourn for them. And if you win a war, you must grieve it. Weapons are terrible things. No sage will have anything to do with them unless there is no alternative. And you really, I would say, have to be pushed and pushed, you know.
It'd have to be a last resort, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it has to be a last resort. If you look back over our podcast, you will see that there's one, I can't even remember the titles of them, I think there's one called Give Peace a Chance. There might be one, War and Peace or something like that. But if you look back, I've certainly dealt with the military-industrial complex and military spending and how the major global economies are all basically in thrall of the military-industrial complex. But there's a CIA whistleblower called Shipp, and he calls it the Pentagon in the US. That's the deep state. He calls the CIA and the NSA and the FBI and the various intelligence agencies, he calls those the shadow government. But this is all about war. It's all just to think that is okay means that there's a very dark corruption in your soul, that you are unable to feel the life of another, empathise with the life of another, or even feel your own life in its full amplitude. That would be enough. That is enough. That's why I encourage people to contemplate and to meditate, because you then realise the absolute glory and preciousness of human life. Even at the same time as you accept that you will die and you don't make heavy weather of it. That is the way that people find out. And you realise that peace is a very, very great good. And thank you, Lao Tzu, because you put it really, really well there, old chap. Really well.
I notice he mentions the left and the right, which I find interesting.
Yeah.
I just wonder if that has... And he does seem to be describing the left and the right in the ways that we would talk about the left and the right.
Yeah,
Is this... Did our ideas when we used those terms these days?
No.
Did it perhaps come
from
there?
It's kind of coincidental. I mean, he's just talking about conventions. He's just talking about the conventions of his day. Confucian society, which Lao Tzu emerges from, is very, very formalistic. It has conventions and rituals for everything, particularly at the level of the emperor and the civil service and the army and so forth, state organisation. Everything's ceremonial and prescribed and positively fucking anal, you know. And he's a bloke who's he's in reaction to all this way of doing stuff. He likes it. He's much looser. He's a much looser character. He sees the virtue in Wu Wei, letting things flow and using that. He's not impractical, as I say, deeply practical. And ancient Chinese science was well in advance of anything in the West by 500, 600 years, you know, because of Taoist contemplation. And it's a contemplative style and a meditative style that's alert to nature. You don't necessarily have to close your eyes. You can sit on the rock up there and watch a buzzard flying over, you know, and notice the way that it flies and just take it all in. And that emphasis on the Dewi spirituality, on contemplation of nature, rather different from the very internal thrust of Indian spirituality, yoga, Patanjali yoga and so forth, that gave rise to this pretty advanced science. Because you notice patterns in nature and then you're able to utilise them intelligently. Whereas the Confucian approach to everything is just pretty well the opposite. Everything's about obeying the rules. You get the rules, you fix them and you obey them forever. It's deeply conservative. And it doesn't lend itself to observation of that sort of scientific kind. So it's very practical. You have to keep it reiterating this with, because he's so mystical and yet so practical. I mean, as far as I see, he's like the ultimate guy, you know, in this field, in that field.
He's the man.
He's the guy, you know. I mean, I'm not wanting to underestimate the achievements and gifts of other great contemplators. But Lao Tzu, fucking hell, man. And it just speaks, as I keep saying, it speaks to us now in many, many ways. But left and right, you know, how that came about was, I think it was in the French Revolution, you know, the left and the right side in the assembly. Which side of the assembly you stood on? The left of the aisle, the right of the aisle, and it sort of, You might want to correct me on this if you want to look it up on Wikipedia. You might find something different, but it just comes from that. I don't see any mystical stuff about the lunar side and the solar side. There might have been in the minds of the people that they were concocting it. There may well have been. Who knows? But what he's saying is he's just using the protocols of the day to show that the army is a death machine.
Okay, so I hope everyone found that interesting. We found it pretty interesting to talk about and revisit. Well, we'll speak to you soon.
Okay. Over and out.
Make knowledge great again.
Indeed.